Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Unspun episode 86. I'm your host, Jan Irvin, joined today by Clint Richardson. First off, I wanted to start off by giving a shout out to Phil Hamilton, which I found something today that I had overlooked, that he had sent me back in January. And this is his tale, Hunting the Meaning of Hunger and Harm, Fox Tales. But he had included a letter and a donation with it, and I just found the stuff less than an hour ago. So, Phil, I'm sorry for that, and sorry for not responding, mentioning that. Also, thanks to Marie for her donation. And thanks to 6-year-old Kane, who sends a donation and a letter asking, someday will you do a show for kids? The grown-up ones are hard to understand. Well, you know, Kane, I gotta say, you're ahead of all of the adults in the audience. But, you know, that's a good question. Maybe you should consider if you and other kids, you and other children can, I hate the word kids, can do something like that. Maybe one of these days, kids, children teaching children how to think and get through all of this nonsense. Clint, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. That reminds me, a long time ago I started a children's story, actually. Like, how can I put this in a children's story but for adults, right? Because, you know, it's easier to understand a children's story. So I came up with the concept of the hermit crab, because I used to have hermit crabs as a pet. And I'm like, so the shell will be the metaphor for the person. You know, the crab has to have that shell on his back in order to have the safety and the protection of you know, the government, basically. So that was my little and the hermit crab would go on a journey to find himself, you know, and find the perfect shell or lose his shell. I don't know. Become something more. No need for the protection and the security. I don't know. Good times, though.
Well, Clint, thanks for sending me a couple of copies of your new book. I appreciate that. This came out since the last time you were on.
It did.
And so, you know, I've read a little bit of it. I haven't had a chance to really sit down and dive into it. You know, the problem lately is I seem to read about 15 or 20 books at a time. You know, it's
right.
You know, it's hard to, you know, and I'll you know, I so often want to sit down and focus on one, and it's just so hard to right now. But I do plan on sitting down and focusing on yours, and so people should check out your website also. What's your website?
You can download it free in PDF, always. It'll always be free at strawmanstory.info. And you know, I don't get it because you're going to sit down and read it like a Nancy Drew freaking novel, right? Get it because it's a major, major resource of legal terms, biblical terms, things that you've never been shown before or have never bothered to look. It's a tome of research is what it is. It's not my personal opinion. It's not my – it's just, if you will, a dumbed down way of teaching what is actually in the law and in the Bible and how they oppose each other at every angle. So
if somebody asks you for a summary, what you say is, this is it.
I say, yeah, it's pretty difficult to summarize. But the simplest way, to me, the simplest way to explain it is, we have the legal law, which is what I started out learning, right? And see if I get these words right, because it's always hard to remember which one goes where. But the legal law has no story to follow. You don't have a story like the Bible where you have a character that you can follow as he goes in and out of situations where he's forced to make a choice about which law to follow, right? You could follow the Christ story and you can understand what the law, the Bible law or the scriptural law, the natural law, God's law, whatever you want to, whatever fancies your, you know, tickles your fancy, whatever you want to call it, But then over here you have a what I call a cipher with, but you or a deciphering tool, which is legal dictionaries and court cases, but you have no story. Who? What is the legal man? You know, like the we talked about the five regimes, right? Plato's Republic. You had the democratic man and the timocratic man. And well, what about the legal man? What is the story of the legal man or the quote unquote straw man? And all the word straw means is to have no substance, right? If you're made of straw, it means that you're form without substance. So a scarecrow is a man, but it's not a man. It's an artificial man, right? That's essentially the easiest way to understand what a straw man. A straw man, a person, is nothing more than the personification of the straw man argument. Exactly. Why does government have power over you? Because it says you're not you. You're this straw man. You're this person that we've created, and therefore it's our creation. We're its God. And therefore, you're following our rules because you are using our person. You are therefore basically a straw man. All the punishments that go on the straw man are going to go to you. So it's you that go to jail instead of the fictional corporate structure. You know, it really is no more or less than that. And so the book is basically you have. It's telling the legal story of the straw man compared to the spiritual journey and law of Christ, which is just a personification of law. Follow Christ means follow the law, right? So,
but and to be clear for the audience, it's not saying follow the government's law. It's saying follow natural law.
Sure. That which is opposed to natural law is anything man-made.
Let's okay, and so. Anything, let's give the audience a definition of natural law.
Well, so most people, when they hear the notion of natural law, they immediately, that word nature makes you think of nature, but it's really, I would say it's the law of source. So when we say something like, you're guilty of original sin, well, we've been told that means sex, right? Original sin, I'm going to get it all without marriage. But that means your origin. So what is your origin? What is your source? Are you, and this is what I want to talk about today anyway, is are you an act of nature, an act of God, in other words, i.e. part of creation, or are you an act of the state, a person of the legal system? So obviously, what is of nature, what is of the source of nature, is going to be under that quote-unquote natural law or the law of source, which, you know, if you compare that concept to the law of fiction, which, you know, is nothingness, it has no source but man's imagination, man's creation, it's literally fiction, it's artificial, it's nothingness. Turned into a false reality, a false paradigm, basically. So
in a sense, natural law is also truth.
It is purely the truth, self-evident, self-existent truth. It cannot be denied. You can't say that existence doesn't exist.
And,
right?
And this is what people try to actually deny. They try to deny truth, and they try to use primacy of consciousness that. They are not of the world. They are not of reality. That reality is a reflection of them, the most egoic thing you can possibly claim.
Yeah, the simplest way to look at it is that I have a license to kill. Look, I can break the natural law, which says do no harm, do not kill, you know, do not any of that, because I have a legal license from the government that says I'm a killer. So I can do that. You see, I've accepted a flattering title. And a person from government, which the Bible tells me not to do. We talked about that last show. And the last show we did should certainly be a precursor to this show, I think. But back to the natural law. See, the thing about the natural law that you can never really tell anybody is that you have to know the legal law, the opposite of nature, in order to understand why you have a law of nature, you know? Let me give you examples of which we just did, actually. It says, take no respect no person. Do not respect the persons of man. Do not worship God in person. Do not, right? So wait, what is a person? Obviously, there's a difference between a man and a person, and so you have to figure out what that. Why is that part of the law? The whole concept or premise of following the natural law is way more simple than you think, and it is what is in the Bible, and that is to keep your name, yourself. You could say it's self-love as opposed to love of self. So how can you, for instance, love your neighbor as yourself if you're acting as a different person than yourself? If you're acting as something else other than your true self, if I have an excuse that, again, that I can go kill because I have a license to kill, I'm not acting as myself. I'm acting as the person that's provided for me, a creation of, you know, fiction. And so I have an excuse. And that's where the law, the Bible law, says, no excuses. You can't go kill arbitrarily just because you have a place.
Now, let's listen to this guy who, of course, is trying to spew his vitriol before we even get started here. And this is from Quincy de Lazzi, something or other, whatever that means, from the Netherlands. All this mumbo-jumbo at the end of the day doesn't mean S-H-I-T. The only freedom you have is the one you can defend through violence. All else is just is BS under the covert protection by elite in one way or another.
And I wouldn't really disagree with that. I know you meant it as a, I don't know, to be contrary or insulting, but it's true. But, you know, what happens? See,
well, no, what he's saying is everything that you're talking about is nonsense.
No. Do I have control of nature? Does government have control of nature? This is what we're going to be talking about today. And if you'll stick around, your question or your comment will be answered in triplicate. Because when you're talking about nature, which literally is the definite, I mean, God and nature are essentially the same thing. All of existence as one being. So you can't say nature is separate from God or you have religion. So you have to consider that, yeah, absolutely. You have no ability to say, well, I have God on my side, therefore you can't hurt me. I have a magic wall around me. You can't hurt me, blah, blah, right? That's not what we're saying. What I'm trying to tell you is not what I believe, not what you're supposed to believe, but what government believes. What is the foundation of government's law? What is it that you can do that government recognizes and therefore has no power to do anything about? I'm not telling you to go join a religion. You're absolutely right. If I were trying to get you just to be a religious person, that would be absolutely correct. Your assessment.
Right. Which, well, that's what we're not doing.
What I can tell you is what the law that government recognizes. Right now, you're a complete slave and subject to government's law, the straw man law. What you're looking for is to be in the natural law. How do you go from one place or the other? Well, first, you have to recognize what government recognizes as the law, the foundation of law, which we talked about last show. Again, the Bible is the common law, the foundation of the common law. Once you get out of the Bible and into contract law, which is all other law, then you've lost the Bible. You've lost the natural law, or it's what the government recognizes as the explanation of natural law, which is huge, of course, and you've entered into the fictional realm. At this point, you're protected by government, and that means it can come kill you anytime it wants to. That's what protection is, right? You have that right to be killed, put in pain, punished, tax, license, extorted from. That is your right as its citizen, because with subjection or with protection comes subjection. Period. End of story. There's no getting around that. So what you have to know, and what I'm here to try to tell you, is government recognizes this as the law. So let's study and see what the Bible says how to get out from under the legal system, which government recognizes. Government doesn't recognize anarchy. Government doesn't recognize Hinduism. Government doesn't recognize any other religion but, quote-unquote, what it defines as Christianity, which we went over last show. Not any religion, not any standing religion, but the Bible. So if that's not a if that's not a good enough answer, I mean, stick around, because we're going to cover, and I'm going to prove to you today that, one, government believes in God, even though it's a fictional entity. Government says to believe in God and bases its law around that fact. As a subject, number two, as a subject of government, guess what? What government believes, you believe. You don't have a choice because you're under it. So you better learn what it considers as God, what it considers as a quote-unquote act of God. I know everybody's heard that. Anytime you have insurance, hey, act of God. We're not going to cover an act of God because, hey, that's nature. And we're going to get into that heavy. So we know that government recognizes a God. You have a recognition in every state constitution to God for the power to create this state. You have all of these. You put your hand on the Bible, which we need to talk about. You do all these things, and yet you still won't look at the damn Bible. You're putting your hand on it and swearing an oath, which the Bible says not to. Why do you not want to know what the hell is in that Bible? Why are you? Why are they doing that? Why are they getting you to put your hand on the Bible and swear an oath to a false God, the judge, the court, the state, the flag, to all these idols? Because they want you to break the law that is right in your hand, that you could turn over and say, no thanks, this is my law. I follow no other law because that's what this law tells me to do. That's what God in the Bible.
So they get you to swear on the Bible when the contents of the Bible deny the very act of swearing on the
No oaths. No foolish oaths. No false oaths. Well, how can you have anything but a false oath if you're talking about fiction? Right? So you're putting your hand on the very key to reality and to nature and its law, and you're saying, I reject that, and I swear an oath to tell the truth in a purely fictional construct. I'm going to tell the truth in the Matrix, even though nothing's real. How can you? You've blasphemed the God of nature, if you will. Now, again, I'm not talking about religion. You have to understand that this is the way it's set up. I'm telling you the root of how it works. It's ridiculous to me. I don't say that it's something you need to quote unquote believe in. You just need to know that that's how it's set up, and you have to go through these motions in order to get to that point. What I'm trying to say is, when it says, you know, everybody's going for redemption, we talked about this too. Everybody wants redemption. Money, money, money. Because government believes in God, and because it says that the Bible is the foundation of the common law and it derives its precepts and maxims of law from the Bible, that means that even the most anarchist idiot out there, even the nihilist, even the it doesn't matter what you claim. Jesus Christ, sorry to tell you, is your Redeemer. You have to know what that means metaphorically. And what that means is that the law of nature, i.e. Jehovah, God, is your redemption. To follow the law or follow the Son metaphorically, allegorically, is to follow the law. That is your redemption. That is your salvation. And that's how Jesus Christ is actually defined in the concordances as simply Jehovah is salvation. And we talked about what Jehovah means, you know, last time. If you can just get that, throw out all the emotion, throw out all the conditioning, and just understand that you're in a game. And, you know, when we bring out that board game or that chessboard or the game of Monopoly and we set it up, we don't say, well, I'm not going to follow those rules. We say, I'm gonna follow. Otherwise, the game's not going to work. So if you want to get out of a completely tyrannical system, then you follow the rules.
The rules.
And you find.
So you pick this thing up right here, and you read it, and you study it, and you figure out, you know, hey, well, they base all of the rules of the game on this, so we better read the rule book.
Right. So
you pick up the rule book. It's like when you play a game in a Monopoly or anything else, or a game of chess, there's the rules, the pawns do these moves, the knights, the bishops, etc. So you know the rules of the game. So here's the rules of the game in this book
and
they call the Bible.
Just so you understand, when you've set up that Monopoly board, Monopoly's the perfect, I'd say the perfect, if you will, story or allegory of legal life, right? You go round and round. You never actually gain anything. You get little paper titles to land that are fiction, right? The land is real, but the title is fiction. And you make that land private so that if anybody steps on the land, they have to pay a fee for usage, right? The game of Monopoly is the perfect example of what's happened to us, because now all the land has been taken. We have a little tiny track that we can go through called the public lands. We can't go on any private lands, and if we land on private land, we have to pay a fine or we get shot or whatever, right? So it's the perfect model, but you have to know one thing. You see, the only reason that you're stuck in that frickin' Monopoly game is because, one, at the beginning of the game, what did you do? I want the thimble. I want the shoe. Right? You took an avatar, you took a persona, a mask, and you're playing the game as that person, that fictional entity, right? And that's exactly what you're doing in the legal realm. What does the Bible say most of all? Take no artificial persons, no persons, places, or things. Respect nothing, no genealogies, fabled genealogies, which is why we have kings. None of that. Stay real. Just keep it real, man. Don't ever say you're something when you're no thing, which, again, what is a thing but a name, a person, place, or thing, a noun, right? You're no thing, right? So don't act like you're something other than you are, which is a creation, if you will, of God. Again, take the metaphor as it's meant to be. You're part of nature, so act like it instead of playing these fictional games that we play.
And
the important part is that avatar, that fake, you know, I want to be the car. I want to be something I'm not.
And understanding the term God that you're using is as a verb and not a noun of this thing, and, you know, floating in the sky, sitting on a throne or something like that. So,
which is why the last show we did is definitely...
Right. You know, I'm just reminding people of that, because, you know, if you get that it's a verb rather than a noun, and you think of it in terms of anything that ever was, is, or could be, then and it's just the motion of creation itself, then you understand the principle or the idea.
Sure, and keep in mind too that board game, right? When we're done with the board game, we especially in Monopoly, we fold up the game, and guess what? All the hotels and houses and titles and all the money, where does it go back to? The bank, right? Goes back in the box, and we still have nothing. Even though we played the game, at the end of the game, we still have nothing. It all goes back to the bank, right? So you have this fictional playing field, and the important connection there is that, you see, the reason you need that shoe or that car, race car, or that thimble is because the board only recognizes those pieces. You can't get on the board. This is fiction. You can't go there. In order to enter the cartoon, you have to assume a cartoon character. So you go and you take that car or that thimble, and you're now in the legal realm. It's nothing you can really see, touch, taste, or feel. It's fiction. But you've made it this matrix, this false reality, if you will, that and you follow all its rules, and you know, but what you're really doing is you're following the rules of the car, of the person, of the fictional character, and you're pretending to be that character. And so you're responsible or surety for that character. And therefore, if the character lands on freaking chance and has to pay a fine for something or whatever, you, as the puppet master for the puppet, have to pay. And you are responsible, and you will serve time in jail because your puppet did something it wasn't supposed to. That's the game that we're living. That is what the idea of calling it a straw man is, because it's a man with no substance, a person, a status, a reputation, you know, it's artificial. And above all else, you know, that those are the two paths that we can take. We can go down the path of nature, of reality, of truth. And of course, wait a minute, God is truth. That's a direct quote. If God is truth, well, I mean, obviously that's reality, it's nature. And then you have the fictional path, the legal path, or the straw path of the straw man. So that is, in a nutshell, what the book is trying to get across. But the only way I can do that is to explain what the terms of the Bible meant. For instance, death, right? Would we say that the shoe on the Monopoly board was ever actually alive? Or is it a sestercuve dead entity created by legal fiction? Well, nothing in fiction is actually living, right? So when the Bible's talking about death, and you freaking got Lazarus rising from the dead, you got Christ risen from the dead, you got, it sounds like a freaking zombie apocalypse happening, all these people rising from the dead. And all that is a metaphor for the straw man is spiritually dead. He's following a strict law. He doesn't have to think. The law is provided for him. Whereas the Christ man, the Son of God, is following God's law, and he has to think at every junction. He has to make that choice to remain on that path. And that was one of the comments that I found humorous. Because the guy was real serious, you know. On the last YouTube we did, he mentioned, and he was just real serious. He was like, "You said the left hand path. That's a term that goes back to Satanism and da 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 da." And I read it and I was like, you know, you're absolutely right. In the Bible, let's clarify, okay? What does the Bible say? The Bible says Christ is on the right hand of God. Now, when Jan says, you know, follow the right hand path or the left hand path, he is not, as far as I know, a Luciferian. He is not intending to use a satanic cult term, a term of their art that has nothing to do with the real word itself, right? So if Jan or I happen to slip and say right hand path or left hand path instead of the right arm of God and the left arm of God, it's the same intention. And for you to listen to a conversation like this, which is being broadcast to you for free with the greatest of intentions to help in everyone's journey, and you come back at me with, oh, you're quoting a satanic doctrine or something, you know, it makes you look like an absolute fucking fool. And you know, one of the greatest, Jan, you're gonna find this if you really, if you've studied it, I know you've gone through it. One of the greatest things for me about the Bible was that every time I read the word fool, right, I was like, wow, that's talking about me. Right? Because it's not saying, you know, if every Bible had, you know, instead of fool, it said Clint or Jan or, right? It'd be personal, but no, that's not how it works. It says, it leaves you that sort of gracious, you know, whatever, to the humility to say, ah, oh, shit, I'm the fool there. It says the fool will do this, but the wise man will do this, but I did what the fool did. I'm the fool. Right? So all throughout the Bible, it's calling you a fool. And one of my favorite verses, and I feel confident in calling people a dumbass, because the word dumbass is in the Bible. I mean, it's basically calling someone a fool. You know, you're like a dumb ass. So I feel perfectly perfectly fine calling people a dumbass or calling myself a dumbass, you know, a little self-deprecation. So when you realize you're the fool that the Bible's talking about because you're following the wrong path or are on the right or left, wrong side of God, it really helps to bring you down to the point where you just want the knowledge. You don't want to put anybody down. You just want the knowledge. And that's all I want to share. I'm not giving you my opinion. I'm not giving you what I think it should be. I'm saying, hey, here's the Encyclopedia Judaica. I got the whole set back here. Here's 50 different kind of Bibles, including the Masonic one, the Companion Bible, 1611 Bible. I got all the sources. I get it all online. I got a big book that you can look at, and it quotes directly from the sources. It's not me telling you this. It's just me that spent all this time figuring it out.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, I was just going to pull this up, but I've got, you know, I think the Bible actually does mention left on the left hand where he doth work, etc. But yeah. He hitteth himself on the right hand that I cannot see him, but he knoweth the way. Anyway, they do actually mention right left hand path. Or at least the right and left hand, but yeah, I mean, you know, it's synonymous with the right and left arm, but
yeah. So
turn not, you know, to the right nor left, et cetera. Remove thy foot, you know, and even that, what, you know, you have this middle path, and you have to read between the lines, excuse the pun, to figure out how they're manipulating that one too.
There's the perfect example to say, well, why does it say that Lucifer, right, the false light or the darkness posing as light, will also appear as the light or Christ, right? Why will Lucifer also appear as good, right? Why will evil appear as good? Well, there you go. You have the satanic doctrine that says the same thing as the Bible, but it's reversing it.
They take it's Kabbalic inversion. They take the tree and they invert it so that when you're walking the center path, you know, if you're looking at the Kabbalah tree, you have the tree of good and evil, that, you know, so that you can know good and evil. That's the tree. And so when you're on the middle path, it looks like, and, you know, Gino Denning had talked about this with me years ago too, with the Trivium, but the point of knowledge, which I forget what it was, dot or something like that, I don't remember which sefer it was, but so it falls to the ass position, and the fallen tree is actually the one with the trunk that's shown. It should be upward inside the tree, which would be the knowledge position. But if knowledge is fallen to the ass position, then we can see why knowledge is no longer you know, popular.
Again, that's the metaphor. Everything's a
right.
metaphor.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I'm God, I'm a burning bush. Right? That's,
well, why, but if you
why,
get
why
that, it's all
like the man in the sky. And I think the burning bush is much more interesting, because how long can the burning bush burn? Right?
Well, I think, you know, when you understand that this a lot of it is this allegory and this tree representation helps you to understand these things.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. Again, unfortunately, this is in my second book, but the tree analogy, or the Garden of Eden itself, is one of the most fascinating things when you uncover the coded, you know, what's been hidden, basically. You go back to those concords, you go back to those original words, you find out, first of all, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, right? That is nothing more than the tree of the concepts of men. What is a creation of man? See, there is no good or evil in nature. Nature exists as it is. Look, that's why you define God. That's why you can't really blame God. I mean, if you're out of harmony with nature and nature comes back, kicks you in the ass to get reharmonized, that's your fault, not God's fault. Right? You can't blame nature for just existing as it's supposed to exist in harmony when you're freaking tearing it apart. You know, there again, the allegory or the metaphor of judgment, right? Well, if you pollute the drinking water that you're drinking, then your judgment is freaking cancer and death, you idiot, right? I mean, that's God's judgment. No, I mean, in other words, nature is trying to, you know, it's your fault is the point. So the tree of of good and evil is nothing more than, you know, oh my God, look at me. Suddenly I realize I'm naked. And that's bad. I must clothe myself. I must cover myself, right? I must have protection. I must seek fictions. So all of a sudden you have all these concepts, as opposed to just being innocent in nature, right? What's interesting about that is that the word garden really translates, the most easy to work with translation would be prison. Wait a minute. Prison of Eden, like that. Those two words actually sound like they're opposed to each other, like the prison of somewhere good, right? But really what's that saying is that you have nature in its glory and beautifulness, right? And it's running along, it's all harmonious, it's untouched by man, right? You call that utopia, because utopia, by the way, in its definition, only means good topiary. Dystopia means bad topiary. So in other words, when it's defined, utopia is the middle of nowhere. Well, what is the middle of nowhere but nature? To man, the middle of nowhere is nature. I can't wait to get back to my city with my McDonald's and my Taco Bell, my Walmart. But the middle of nowhere is to be, when do we say that? When we're in the untouched beauty of nature, basically. So utopia is just that. It is the innocence and untouched, unblemished man in nature, taking care of the topiary or the garden. And therefore, the allegory of it being a prison is because you haven't brought any of the concepts of men into it. You can walk around it naked because you have no, quote-unquote, shame, which is a concept of man, right? There's no shame in nature. Because shame, you have to lie or do something wrong, right? It just doesn't happen in nature. So these are all man-made concepts. Also, it's not an apple tree. It's a fig tree or fig apple. And if you follow the word fig, it's a whole different, again, metaphoric meaning. And it goes to FICO. FICO means to have a fig put on you, which means sort of a fiction or a lie put on you. What does FICO mean, right? That's your credit score. So you look up the word FICO. It doesn't say credit score. It says to have a fig, you know, put on you. So you're picking the tree of good and evil and putting it on someone. You're putting fiction, in other words, on, or a concept of man, onto something innocent. So this is the allegorical, you know, way of reading it, and the only way to do that, of course, is to go read that for yourself in the concordances, and every word says metaphorically it means this, right? So I've done that work, at least a lot of it, and put it in this book so that people don't have to spend the years that I have doing it, and I hope that it, you know, it enlightens people and makes you understand, most importantly, why the Bible is the law and not religion, and that religions are actually against the Bible. Why? Because the Bible says, take no doctrine. Put no faith in men or the creations of men. Take no persons, take no oaths, no flattering titles. This is how you remain eternal, timeless. You know, you're priceless. You have no valuation or mammon. That's how you follow the natural law, is that you've taken no fiction or artifice upon you. And that's all it is. You're not mixing your Christian name, which is the official legal term for first name. You know, you can't deny that. And mixing it with what's called a nickname, a surname, an agnomen, which is a name that's based on an event. Well, an event is recorded, is what is recorded on the birth certificate, a birth event. And that creates the legal fiction, the legal entity, and, you know, the rest is our, each of our histories as we walk and we start using the car or the thimble on the Monopoly board, right?
Straw man.
Yeah, dude, it's just so enlightening. I just can't. It's so frustrating to have to speak. I wish I knew another language, man. I wish I was fluent in anything but English so I could express myself and then come back to English, you know. But.
Well, you know, and I want to read this just because it's the straw man fallacy, the informal fallacy, so that people understand that fallacy who aren't familiar with it. A straw man is a common form of argument and is an informal fallacy based on giving the impression of refuting an opponent's argument while refuting an argument that was not presented by that opponent. One who engages in this fallacy is said to be attacking the straw man. So let's say I present an argument, which in this case would be myself, and then somebody makes a copy of my argument, changes things, distorts them like, you know, like people do constantly about you're in my work, and then they're going to attack that argument and pretend that they've actually attacked our work. It's like the academic community, the entire field of ethnobotany and ethnomycology, since I exposed Wasson and everybody, all of these professors are cowards to attack my actual research. They will name call at me and ridicule and Jan's gone crazy and this kind of stuff, but they don't dare mention all of the Yale and Princeton and Harvard and Stanford and CIA and Library of Congress documents that I cited throughout that anybody can go and get that proves that they're completely full of shit. So, you know, it's, you know, they have to focus on this straw man to keep people, you know, in the audience asleep, you know. And it's like when you see these attacks online against our work, they're not even talking to you or I, you know. If I'm in a public, you know, discussion on this stuff, they're actually, their lies are for the audience reading the discussion. They're not even actually communicating with you.
Well, so part of this book is that it's so fun finding out what words actually meant before we've been conditioned to just accept them. For instance, grocer is one of my favorite words. Like, we have our friendly neighborhood grocer, right? Okay, what does that actually mean? To be a grocer used to be illegal, used to be arrested and thrown in jail for being a grocer. What is a grocer? Someone who buys products and then sells them at exorbitantly higher prices. That used to be against the law, right? Because that's not, you know, that's not good. You don't buy something and then charge 50 times as much for the product. You don't make something for a penny and then charge $50 for it. I mean, that's wrong, and that's what creates so much havoc in the system. That used to be illegal. Now we call it our friendly neighborhood grocer. And that tickles me to no end, because there's so many words that are like that. One of those words that you just used, John, is prestige. Prestigious, right? Prestigious. There was a movie called The Prestige. What was it about? Magic, trickery, illusion. Here's the top 10 universities. I think this was 2014 or something. I don't remember. Here's the top 10 universities listed in order of prestige. And then we're going to define what prestige actually means in the 1828 dictionary, right? Harvard University, Stanford University, Massachusetts, or MIT, Princeton, Columbia, UC Berkeley, Yale, Williams College, Dartmouth College, and University of Notre Dame. These are the colleges rated by prestige. All right. So what is...
Here we go. I'm just going to show this on the screen here. This is pretty funny, folks.
What does prestigious mean? Latin for proestigio. I'm horrible with my Latin. I want to learn it. But juggling tricks or impostures.
Yeah.
Prestigiation. Tricks, the playing of legerdemain tricks, a juggling. A prestigiator, a juggler, a cheat. Prestigiatory, juggling consisting of impostures, right? So now we're at prestigious, practicing tricks, juggling, right? What's an imposture? To impose. That a description really practiced under a false or assumed character, i.e. person, fraud or imposition, practiced by a false pretender. It doesn't say anything about education. Doesn't say anything. This is trickery. It's pure illusion. And then we got to impose something, of course, is to lay on, you know, put it on you. It's a place over you by authority. You can't be a doctor unless you get my permission. And that's basically syndicalism, right? And then pressed is a loan, right? To be put in pressed or to press. And then legerdemain means sleight of hand, a deceptive performance which depends on dexterity of hand, a trick performed with such art and adroitness that the manner or art eludes observation. What the hell do you think education is, man?
The most prestigious award goes to the biggest clown award, the biggest hack, the biggest fake, the biggest fraud, the biggest magic trickster award goes to...
Well, if you're judging your college by prestige, then Harvard is where you want to be. So I guess that means that the best colleges might actually be the city colleges in the fucking ghetto, because those are probably the least prestigious, right? I actually learned something.
Well, you know, I think the San Bernardino Valley College is one that the CIA recruits from, so I don't know if I would agree with that.
Yeah, I think the FBI or the CIA gets a big part of its candidates from good old Mormonville here, because they're raised in the beehive mentality, you know.
Oh, boy. So which direction do you want to go next here?
Well, let me just give you these few quotes. Maybe it'll give us a direction, because
you know, I just really quickly, what was the word I looked up the other day? It was very similar. Just a second, let me pull this up. It was diverse, like you know, diversity in this stuff, and it was where did I put that thing? It was really funny though, because here we go. It's a condition or quality of being diverse, different, varied, difference, unlikeliness. An instance of this condition or quality, a point of unlikeliness, difference, distinguished, different kind, variety. And then, let's see, contrary to what is agreeable, good, or right, perversity, evil, mischief. So, you know, everybody goes around, you know, wanting diversity and prestige. And another really good one is pride, you know. Have you ever looked up pride?
I don't think so.
Oh, man. Oh, well, here, I've let me pull that up. So
I'll have to, I guess.
It's a really good one, because it's like everything that's – it's the like the first of the seven deadly sins. Cause of subjective pride in various proverbs, exhibition of this quality and attitude bearing conduct or treatment of others, arrogance, haughtiness. You know, so it's totally contrary to what most people think. Oh, we, you know, we want to have pride, and gay pride, black pride, this pride, that pride, and it's, you know, the first of the seven deadly sins. So
It's interesting to note that everything that we have pride in is artificial. I have pride in the flag, for instance. I have pride in the United States Corporation, right? Municipal Corporation. I have pride in the soldiers in the army. You know, I have pride in everything. Everything we have pride in is artificial. And what the worst part of it is, most of our pride gets redirected towards the frickin' NFL. Right, or the NBA, which is just unbelievable that sports has taken such a powerful position in the education system. But if you read, for instance, the old You Gentile was a book that this guy read, and I quoted him in my book because I think it's so powerful that he says we learn all our life lessons. We don't learn it from education or from the Bible like we're supposed to. We learn it through sports. We learn it through competitiveness. You know, you watch TV, for God's sake, there was a commercial on the frickin' Food Network the other day and it said, its slogan is to stay competitive. Right? Which is the opposite, of course, of the natural law, which is have love and charity at all times. Give of yourself. Let no man, let yourself never be wealthy until all others are wealthy. Right? Completely the opposite. And that's just on the freaking Food Network, you know, which nobody watches. So the whole thing is about competition, because one of the, for instance, like there's also these words that are not defined in legal dictionaries because they can't define moral or spiritual terms. It has to be their creation, their concept, you know, something they can legislate and rule over, right? So they don't define love. They don't define charity in any way except a corporation, basically. They don't define, one of the interesting ones was predictableness. If I'm under a system of law and you're under a system of law and you have that spiritual notion that you have a duty to fulfill to all your fellow men, no matter who it is, and you never respect anything else, just because you're a lower or a higher class person, I'm going to treat you different. No, you're my equal. We're both brothers under Christ, right? That kind of nonsense talk that actually means something, you know? The notion of predictableness is something that is not defined. Legality makes everything unpredictable. Sports, you know, the competition makes everything unpredictable. Whereas if we were following the law, the natural law, then I would know exactly how you're going to act towards me, and you would know exactly how I'm going to act towards you. I'd have no defenses. I wouldn't need them. And there's no way that you'd be poor and I'd be wealthy, or I'd be poor and you'd be wealthy. See, that's the beauty, is when you start really uncovering these terms and see how they apply to each realm. And you find, again, that almost in all cases, the spiritual and the legal are always at odds. Always. It's just amazing to me.
Did you see Jordan Peterson's breakdown of the word meek, the meek shall inherit the earth, from the Bible the other day, showing how it wasn't meek as in weak. It was those who, you know, basically lived, you know, in natural law.
Yeah,
you know, the prepared, you were to have your sword, you know, and you're not to go around bashing people with it, but you're ready to use it, you know.
And your sword is your tongue, too. You know, that's another metaphor that can be used. So here's a couple quotes.
Your sword.
Yeah. just to get us in the mood here. Mechanical worship, right? What people do when they go to church. Mechanical worship is easy, but completely worthless, right? So going to church every Sunday, worthless. It does nothing for you.
It builds community and things like that, which can have value, you know.
Well, except that the church is teaching you to follow the law of the land, not the Bible. And that's the whole point of the church. It's to misdirect you from the Bible, right? Okay. This I really like this one, because this is probably the most true statement as it applies to U.S. citizens, okay? Because, again, remember, our default state, according to government, is Christian, as it defines, which is not religion, but the law of the laws as walked by Christ. So we're all considered by default to be acts of God, in other words. So the only right... Okay, the only right a Christian has is to give up his rights. So in other words, the only right that a man has, a man who has not been touched by any fiction or any legal system, the only right that I have is to give up my God-given, as they call it in the Declaration of Independence, my God-given or natural right. Okay, there again, that's proof government recognizes God. They're God-given rights, according to government. All right?
Which is natural law, God-given rights.
And that's exactly what we have done. Now, there's a private people and a public people. The private people are those who, quote, reserve all rights. The Constitution protects those people. The Constitution doesn't give any rights. It protects those who reserve all rights. Then you have us, the public. We've all given up our God-given rights. The Constitution, therefore, doesn't apply or protect us. We cannot use it. I have that in triplicate again in my book as well. It doesn't apply to us because we are acting as property, not as private men or citizens of the state, as opposed to the national government, right? Two foreign entities to each other. No greater, this is Martin Luther. People say bad things about Martin Luther, but, I read quotes no matter, I don't care who says them. If it's a good quote, I'm going to use it. No greater mischief can happen to a Christian people, so men, than to have God's word, i.e. the law, because the word and the law and the son are the same terms, to have God's law or word taken away from them or falsified so that they no longer have it pure and clear. Right? Do we have, let's go both sides. Do we have the legal law? Is it clear? Is it pure? Can anybody quote it for me? Is anybody clear on what the Bible says? Has the church been clear with you? When the Pope speaks in Latin, a dead language that nobody speaks, is the Bible being made clear to you? No. No. You see, it's being falsified. It's being hidden in plain sight, essentially. It's everywhere. It's the best-selling book in history, and yet nobody can read it, because nobody's willing to do the due diligence to go back and see what it actually, what the intent of the words are. And that's where we're sitting. We're in mischief. We're, like you read before, we're a Christian people, according to government, not me, okay? Government says we're a Christian people that have given up our God-given rights. We've put aside God's word or law or natural law. We've had it taken away from them in order to act in the person or property of government. That is the metaphoric, allegoric translation, if you will, the one you're supposed to get out of the Bible. It's not what the church will ever tell you, because the church and the state are, well, we'll put it to you this way, Jan. The church and the state have always been one. Okay, we're the only, I think, place that they say, well, it's separate, but they're still married. When you're married and separated or divorced, you're still married. You still rely on the other to stand. It's the same as Democrat and Republican, right? Oh, Republicans fell this 4 years. Oh, Democrat, right? New president. Now it's the Democrat. Oh, Republican. But it's the same freaking bloodline, same freaking family that's ruling. As long as you vote for one of these two, right? Well, there again. As long as you are kept from the law, or i.e. God's word, as the metaphor goes, then you cannot be free from what you've been tricked into, which is the prestigious United States citizenship. See, freedom, the one word I wish everybody would just learn and get over it. Freedom means franchise. That's it. You're in a corporation. You don't have freedom. Your mother corporation, you're never going to detach from your mother's teeth, right? You're in a company store. You can't spend the money anywhere but in the government. You cannot open a business unless you register with government. You cannot exist unless you are registered to government, right? So your person is being taxed and you're responsible to pay the tax, right? So it's just, if people could just understand this invisible spectrum, it's just kind of like the Matrix model, If you just understand that monopoly board, that notion that you're acting as something you're not, or you're acting in the property of another, and therefore you're not the property of God anymore. You're the property of the state, or you're an act of the state. Now, here's some maxims of law, okay? Because we want to define why does government first acknowledge God and the Bible and also say that an accident is an act of God? An earthquake, a hurricane, anything that insurance will not cover unless you have that specific act of God insurance. That has to mean something. That's not just a colloquialism. That's not just a it's not just a metaphor. It's literally saying that an act of God is, we can't cover that because it's never done by any person or agency of man. It's something that's happening in nature. So the maxims of law say an act of God does wrong to no one. Okay, that's one of the foundational principles of law coming straight from the Bible. An act of God does wrong to no one. Well, that's because this is the legal realm, considering all of its entire realm and persons and places and things, which are all fiction. Well, nature cannot hurt fiction, and fiction cannot really hurt nature, right? They're separate realms. So an act of God or an act of nature can wrong no one. Basic foundation of law. But you lose that as soon as you enter into the legal realm. Next one is, the act of God does no injury. That is, no one is responsible for inevitable accidents. So then you have to say, okay, well, if those are the maxims of law, it recognizes there is a God, and it's capitalized with a G, which means it recognizes the highest supreme being, and it says the Bible is the source of that, which now we understand that's Jehovah, or YHWH, or Yahweh, or whatever term you want to put in there to say what the Jews used to say was an unspeakable term. Whatever, I don't care. It's Jehovah is the one that's actually used in the Bible. At this point, you now have to say, okay, well, what is an act of God compared to an act of man? An act of the state, an act of fiction, right? Why is it? We know that what that means, but let's verify. Let us actually go and look up. Sorry, again, this is what's so great about this quote unquote book is that it's a resource. I'm going to type in act of God. I'm going to put a little dash after it. There it is right there. I just pulled it up. What is an act of God? Out of 2,000 and something pages, and this is why I'm giving it for free, so that you can have it on the computer, you can type in a term, put a dash after it, it's going to come up with all the times that term is defined, because that's how I intended it to be, so that you could just pull it up at your fingertips, right? My gift. If you don't want it, that's fine. An act of God is according to Black's First Dictionary, an act of God is an inevitable accident. Any misadventure or casualty is said to be caused by an act of God when it happens by the direct, immediate, and exclusive operation of the forces of nature. Uncontrolled or uninfluenced by the power of man and without human intervention. Right? I mean, that definition right there is one of the most empowering and, you know, information-giving thing you'll ever read. First of all, an inevitable accident. What is the birth process? It's based on an accident of birth. In other words, there's no the accident of birth is insured through personhood. We'll maybe get into that. So inevitable accident, that's our birth. Right? Anybody that's born, anything that's born into nature is an inevitable accident. It's not a creation of man. A misadventure or calamity that is a direct, immediate, and only exclusive operation of the forces of nature uncontrolled or influenced by the power of man. In other words, anything not created by man. Without human intervention, well, human, we have to understand the difference between human and man. When they call us human, they're calling us property. Because the word human means that which belongs to man but is not man. So when we see the human anatomy, it's what belongs to a man. The heart, that's the human heart. It belongs to the man. But if I call you a human, I'm saying you belong to some another man. You belong to another, you know, another thing. So it's a very bad word when it's used to describe, say, humanity. It's actually a really bad word. It's like saying cattle, right? A herd. Government has just said that there is a higher power called God, and it defines the actions of or the forces of nature, again, as an act of God. So, again, the one higher power that government recognizes over and above itself, as well as its law and its actions, is nature. What is the path of Christ? It's the law, to follow the law of nature alone and never be tainted by anything that is not direct, immediate, and exclusive operation of nature. In other words, no fiction, no artifice, no names, titles, oaths, genealogies, all the different things. I had a huge list of things that I could rattle off that it says not to touch, and it's everything that we touch or do as citizens of the United States or any nation. And, you know, to be clear, to define the word nation in the Companion Bible and in the Encyclopedia Judaica, nation means Gentile or Goyim. If you're part of a nation, if you call the nation your father or God, then you're a slave to the, so that means that you, again, you have the choice. You have the open-air debtor's prison of the legal hell, or you have the Garden of Eden over here, nature untouched, the prison, or to be an act of or a slave of God and its law, or to be a slave of men and their law. That's essentially where we're – that's our path. That's our split, the right hand and the left hand. That's the best way.
I would agree with that. All right, Clint, we're a little bit past. Usually the show's about an hour, but let's see. What can people expect in the next episode?
Well, I'll tell you what. I know we want to kind of do a little series of this, but the purpose and the reason I wanted to specifically cover this subject is that this is out of your control. If you are pledging your fealty, your allegiance, your subjection to this government, then it tells you what your God is. It tells you what your law is. And you see, you don't choose your God. You choose which law to follow, and that defines your God. So if you're following this law, then I just told you what government acknowledged as the higher power than it and the higher law than it. And that's so important to understand, because that's telling you that, hey, the answers are in the Bible. The law that it's referring to as the natural law, God's law, is in the Bible. You can't imagine anybody arguing that at this point, because
they will. I mean, people will figure out a way to thumb down the episode for pure misunderstanding. Or
it's called a Christian name. I mean, there's so much. I'm not saying that the nation itself has anything to do with the Bible except to be opposed to it. Right, that's the whole definition of legal, is to be opposed to reality or opposed to God. So I'm going to release a document, a blog entry that is sort of it's a straw man article, because we really need to, you know, get into we now know the sort of the basics and tenets of the natural law. Now we know we need to turn. We need to look at our lives. How did we get to this point? How did we get into a contract? Did you sign a contract? I didn't sign a contract. How did that happen? Well, you know, you find out that there's no signature necessary. It's their system. They make the rules. You don't, right? You can't you don't. You're just a subject. You don't. You're not a god. You're a follower. So by getting into what the straw man is, we now know kind of the difference between a person and a man. We'll get into that and why it gets us into so much trouble. The IRS came out with a document, whitewash paper, basically, and it was I call it a severe straw man argument, because it's taken all the patriot mythology and all the, you know, crap that she comes from the quote unquote truth movement. And it's using the truth movement's arguments, which are false, and provably so, easily so,
against itself.
Those, but it's never actually telling you the correct definition of what they're trying to do. So it's not helping you anyway. It's just a whitewash. She's saying, oh, there's no straw man. Forget that it's legally defined in, you know, in every dictionary. No straw man. So I took that and I'm picking it apart and exposing it as just pure bullshit. I mean, it's just the crappiest written thing ever. And giving all the definitions, so almost like a precursor to the book, if you will, that people can read, and I'll try to post that maybe tomorrow, and we'll do another show and talk about that stuff. All the things that the Bible says not to do, you're going to find that every single one of those is, of course, what we do on a daily basis. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. So I think next weekend Bill Joslin may be on. I need to confirm that, but it would either be next week or the week after that. I think we can have you back.
Yeah, anytime, man.
All right. Well,
and by the way, thank you. we at this point we got to stick together, because I got to tell you, it's very strange. I used to get called for 2 or 3 interviews a week when I was talking about the Kaffir, when I was talking about this. Now that I'm apparently a Bible thumper, or I'm trying to get people to religion, nobody wants me on. Like, the truth, like the reality of things, does not jive with this anything in.
But
this,
you know, there's so much in the Bible that you have to understand to get this stuff. It doesn't matter what people need to grasp, and we explained this 50 times in the last episode that we did together, but it's not about your beliefs in the Bible or and religion and all of that. It's understanding that the society that's all around you is based on it, and you need to know it if you want to navigate it. We explained at the beginning of the show, this is a rule book so that you understand the rules of the game and how to live in this country, in this world, etc. It's the rule book that they use. When you go to court, you swear on the Bible. The laws are based on the Bible. The president is sworn in under the Bible. So why would you not want to understand the very book that everybody is swearing to or on?
Let's make our own allegory, right? Let's make our own metaphor. Let's say you get a big box in the mail, and you know that if you can put – there's 1,000 parts in the box, and it comes with perfectly clear instructions, right? And the instructions, every word's defined for you, and you can – you know, if you follow those instructions, which is essentially the law of how to put the thing together, you know you're going to have a perfectly good thingamajiggy, right? Right? And you're going to love it. It's going to be great. But you say no. I reject that law. I will not accept that is the law. Throw it away. I will put this together myself. I will figure out the pieces all by myself. And you get a thingamajiggy, but it's more jiggy than thing.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's like that's the analogy of the grammar aspect of the trivium. It's like the who, the what, the where, and the when before you can understand why and how and why. You know, and I have often used the analogy of the car. You know, if you take a car apart and you put all of the parts all over your driveway and they're all spread out, now you can see all of the grammar of your car, all of the parts that you're dealing with. When you put all of those parts back together and they all fit in the right place and you put the key in and it starts and there's no contradictions, that's the why aspect. That's understanding all of the parts. And then if you wrote a Chilton's manual on all of the steps that you did to put all of those parts back together and start the engine and make it all work, That's the how. You know, who, what, where, when, why, and how. So, you know, you have to understand the parts that you're dealing with. All we're trying to say is, like, look, folks, whether or not you like it, this is the rule book that they're basing stuff on. So, you know, if you're not understanding the rules, then, rules, what's, I don't know, antonym for that, like, fool?
Well, right. I mean, that's what it would tell you. If you throw this book out with the bathwater, or the fool would throw this book out because...
And you're the fool. Vip!
Right. I mean, and I was. I want to be perfectly clear, man. I was the absolute fool. I, more than anybody out there, I despised the whole concept of religion. I thought it was stupid. No. And I still kind of do. But I now have a respect. Well, I won't say a respect, but an appreciation, I guess, for it, because I understand that it's a system set up to confuse. You know, it's a perfect system, really.
And if you stay to the right arm of God, the right-hand path, if you will, and it's just, you know, in your opinion, it's an allegory. Jesus is an allegory to help you stay out of the trappings of those who use this as a rule book. And they say, hey, you know, if you live this way, you can kind of get out of it, even though you might get killed.
You know, I mentioned the book of Eli on my show. I started a new radio show as well on UCY TV every Sunday, but I mentioned the movie Book of Eli, which is one of my absolute favorites, because here you have the perfect example. You have a society that's been dumbed down because of an apocalypse. Nobody can read. You've got a guy in control of a city who can read, so it's kind of like the Pope and his minions, right? They can read, and everybody else is illiterate. He's sending all these guys out to search for the Bible, but he's not telling them what he's looking for. He's saying, gather all books you can find, but I'm not going to teach you how to read that you can actually even read the title, so you don't know what I'm actually looking for. So he's all these you know, horrible people are out there scavenging, raping, and pillaging and looking for the Bible. The reason he wants it is because with people who cannot read the language it's written in, you can use the Bible for that purpose, to control, which is exactly all of our story. That's what these people have done. It's what the Catholic Church has done. It's, again, why it reads it in Latin instead of English or Italian, right? You're reading it in a dead language. On the same story, you have a guy walking through the desert, walking through the wasteland, carrying the Bible, hiding it so that it's safe, trying to take it to a place where it can be disseminated, where the knowledge of the lost law, again, a perfect allegory of where we're at right now. You might not look at our modern times as an apocalypse, but man, look around.
Oh, yeah, you just look around. You see,
so it's
there's signs and wonders.
So that means that essentially, depending on your personal objective and intent, you will find light or darkness, and you will use the Bible for power or for charity and love and
liberation.
That's the big choice right now. That's the delusion that's over us right now, to stay competitive and don't love, don't be at peace, always harm everybody.
And there's this whole push to get people to not study the Bible, because the more they don't study it, the easier it is to enslave them, because then they don't know the rules of the game.
So instead, you create a shit language called English.
And a bunch of cults under the CIA.
Yeah, and you write it.
And Bob Dobbs.
Yeah, so everybody's taking the language. Nobody can figure out the metaphor. And all the old languages are, of course, called the romantic or the, you know, poetic languages. And so we're stuck. You know, we might as well not be able to read or write, because unless we do the due diligence that you've done and I've done, you will not know what the Bible says. You won't even know what the word God means, because there's 50 different words that that actually mean God. I mean, that are, or I should say, that are translated into the word God. Most of the time, it's men, right? And I figured that out by myself, just saying, okay, wait, who created the heavens and the earth? The Elohim? The gods? Wait a minute. That's just the Babylonian creation story, right? And then the other day, I pulled down my Encyclopedia Judaica, right? And I looked up the, you know, God, or the, and I found the names of God.
Well, this, you might, let me just interject here. You might find this book interesting. This is a 500-year-old book, The Judaizing Calvin. And Egidius Hunnius, I guess, is, I don't know how the heck to pronounce that, but he argues that the quote-unquote Elohim were actually originally intended to, and he makes a pretty good argument. He, you know, shows it because Calvin had made an argument, you know, trying to dismiss this, but he shows that it was the Trinity, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, which was what was meant there. But, you know...
Again, Trinity is more of a religious concept than it is a biblical concept.
Right. Well, I mean, if you want to take it out of that, you could say trivium and then go back into natural law, and somebody takes it and spins it the other direction.
Well, so again, you know, like the rapture, not in the Bible, right? I mean, it's just not there. But there is this important notion of the return of Christ. Now, the church says, Christ is just going to, you know, come back, and you're going to see him, and he's going to be like, hey, what up? Why aren't you doing my law? I'm going to take you and you and you. We're going to go in. We're going to leave these guys here. No, come on. That's just idiotic, right? I mean, it's just, how do you possibly believe such nonsense? But the metaphor that Christ, i.e. the law of God, will return to each man, and therefore Christ returns through the actions of men, is a beautiful, beautiful allegory. It's a beautiful, beautiful way to say Christ will return. Well, all that means is that men will start, will have the revelation, and will start
following
the information, and will start following the law again.
Following natural law, i.e. truth, i.e. you know.
It's, yeah, it doesn't mean you're going to be taken up to heaven. No, you have to create heaven on earth.
And you know, and it's like, you know, there's 5 thumbs down for this episode, 22 thumbs up. So it's really interesting how many people don't even get what you're saying for this episode, you know, and watch, you know, how many will thumb up or down just by me saying that right there.
Can't do anything about someone. I mean, those are...
Again, we're going back to, you know, reading the lid inside the Monopoly box that has the rules there, right?
It's like, I hate
that. Oh my God, I hate that. The rules in the lid. I'm playing it this way. And then you just have chaos. But, you know, eventually you're like...
I'm not going to see that movie because it's about God. I know it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
Or I hate that movie because the critics said it's bad.
Right.
I haven't seen it.
All of the attacks I get on my work are by people who've never read it or studied it, and they think that I've overlooked some point that they want to make. I've never had somebody attack any of my papers or anything that's actually read it. They only, you know, and I get attacks every day from people. You know, all these hippies and New Agers will write me, but they never attack anything I've actually written. And they always think that they have some original thought that I didn't consider before I wrote my article. And it's, you know, it's just, wow, your points are covered ad infinitum, had you even bothered to look and had the respect. And they'll sit there, you need to respect me and hear my point of view about your article that I refuse to read.
face it, man, you're, for the rest of your life, You're a freaking troll magnet, man. I mean, you might as well just, you know, give up. If that bothers you, you might as well give up now, because that's going to be with you your whole life.
Well, I mean, even the willful dupes, aside from the trolls, I mean, you know.
Sure.
All right, Clint. Well, we'll have you back in a week or two, and we'll follow up more on this. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to those of you who supported Uncommon. I think he donated in there. Others, please donate. Please also go to Clint's website, donate to him, Reality Blogger, and Strawman, what was the name of the website?
Story.info.
Strawman, yeah, strawmanstory.info and realityblogger.wordpress.com with one L, right?
Yeah, that's where I'll post the blog. The other site is where you can download the book free, and I really recommend you do, because we said, I mean, I just type in a word, and you, there it is. Hey.
Right. All right, great, Clint. Well, thanks so much, everybody. See you next week. Thanks, Clint. See you soon.
Take care.